want to speak today about a very relevant shaila on Shabbos. Probably just about everyone has bumped into the shaila one time in their career. That's the issue of making tea on Shabbos. But we're going to not only speak about the specific aspect of making tea on Shabbos, but we're going to use this as a springboard to discuss the really basic issues in terms of bishul. And many of the klal and many of the principles that we're going to try to develop in this morning's shiur, we're going to be able to use them and plug into a whole series of different bishul questions that may come our way. But at least we're going to begin with the issues in terms of making tea. So the assumption of the poskim is that to take a raw tea leaf in the old days or an uncooked tea bag is a very serious problem of bishul. It's a problem of bishul min hatorah. You're taking something which is raw, cooking it up. So that's our halachic equivalent of taking a raw piece of meat, taking a raw egg, putting it under the fire. We are dealing with the potential issue of bishul min hatorah. It's interesting that just historically that the issue of bishul on tea was something that the Rishonim didn't discuss for a very simple reason. The Rishonim pointed out they didn't have tea. Once tea started to make its way into the Western world, then we find already in the early Acharonim have a whole discussion about tea and a whole series of different issues. There's the Bishul B'Shabbos and Bishul Akum and Hilchos Brachos and all sorted areas of Halacha. We're going to focus particularly on Hilchos Shabbos. So to take a raw tea bag or raw tea leaves and to cook them, that we're dealing with the Nisim in Hatorah. However, most of us don't necessarily, even during the week, take a tea bag and put it into a pot of water, which is classic visual. Most of us take water either from a tea kettle or from an urn and pour it onto a tea bag. And the question becomes, is that considered to be visual altogether? So here we have to introduce ourselves with basic principles of the visual. That's the concept of a kli rishon and the concept of a kli sheni. Kli rishon means when you have a pot of water that's either sitting on the fire, that's the worst case scenario, that's a kli rishon al gabi ha'esh. So there's the sure bishul min hatorah. Take an egg, a raw egg, take a raw piece of meat and put it into a kirishon or tabi or egg, that's clearly bishul min hatorah. But even if you take that pot of water and put it down on the counter, provided that the pot of water is still hot, and for our purposes, we're going to define hot as being yatza lettuce, but it's hot enough that if you put your hand, you would have to draw your hand away. So we're not talking about all that necessarily boiling hot, but it's still fairly hot. Even if it's a klirishon shaloa gavi ha'esh, at one time was on the fire, but it's no longer on the fire, that also is a problem of bishul. And according to the overwhelming majority of the poskim, that's a problem in HaTorah of bishul. I say the overwhelming majority of the poskim, there are some who want to argue that maybe that's only bishul midrabanan, but it's generally speaking not accepted. So we're dealing with a bishul deraisa problem, either with a klirishon al ha'esh, or with a klirishon shaloa gavi ha'esh. What about once the contents of the pot have been transferred into a second kli, into a kli sheni? So here the Gemara tells us in the Masechta Shabbos and the Mem of the Beis, kli sheni eino mevashel. That the simple reading of the Gemara is that once the hot water has been transferred into another container, into a cup, into a bowl, so then there's no problem of bishul whatsoever. Halavai, that should be the halacha. By the time we really come to the point of what the Gemara says, kli sheni eino mevashel to be, any guy cooks in a kli sheni, we're lining up for skila. But we're going to get there in a minute. Let's at least work with the simple reading of the Gemara that kli rishon al gabi ha'esh is a problem. Kli rishon shaloa al gabi ha'esh is also a problem. Kli sheni is perfectly permissible. Question becomes, what about when you're somewhere in the middle? What if you're midway, literally between kli rishon and kli sheni? A term that the Rishonim use, a phrase called irui. Irui meaning that the water is exiting the kli rishon but has not quite landed on the kli sheni. Now, if you think about it, that's a classic case of making tea. You're taking the old style way, you're taking a chinik, you're taking a tea kettle off the fire. So when it's in your hand, it's a kli rishon shaloa gabi ha'esh. You're pouring it onto the tea leaves, onto the tea bag. So the water, before it actually hits the kli sheni, is hitting the tea bag. And the question is that status of irui, is that considered by the halacha to be the equivalent of kli rishon, which would mean bishul d'araisa, presumably? Or is that water, once it exits the kli rishon, even though it has not yet entered the kli sheni, once it's in midstream, that's already considered by the halacha to be kli sheni water. And again, if we're right in plugging in the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, which at least its face value we're right, the kli sheni in mevashel, so presumably it should be perfectly permissible to make a cup of tea, even lechatchila. Again, if you make that assumption, that two assumptions. Number one, that the Gemara is correct what it says, kli sheni in mevashel. And number two, that irui has the status of a kli sheni. Those are the two questionable assumptions. So what is the status of irui? Is irui dinok a kli rishon? Is irui dinok a kli sheni? So actually the source for this discussion primarily is not a sugya in Masechet Shabbos. It's actually a sugya in Masechet Zvachim of all places. I remember from Daf Yomi, a couple of already a few months ago. The Gemara Daf Tzadivach, Masechet Zvachim, there's a whole discussion of this vis-a-vis Kasher and Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash of Karbonos. Very, very complicated esoteric halachas. That all the principles are laid down in that particular sugya. What is the status of Irum? Irum like Levishim, Irum like Lisheni. So the answer to this question is, not surprisingly, is a machlokes. And not surprisingly also, the answer to this question is not either yes or no, but there are actually three different opinions in the Rishonim as to what the correct answer to this question is. And all around T is revolving around this shayla. The first opinion is the most lenient opinion, the opinion of the Rashbam. The Rashbam's opinion was that Kli has the status of a Kli Sheni. Once it leaves the Kli Rishon, it's all over. Kli Sheni and a Mabasha, we plug in the Gemara and Masechet Shabbos of Mem and Veiz. They combine the Sugyan Zvachem Dat Tzadivav, which the Rashbam interpreted to mean Iri is Nimit Kli Sheni, plug combined with the Sugyan Shabbos of Mem. That Kushen in Mavasho comes to Rashbam with the following conclusion, Lamaisa, that it's perfectly permissible, Lichat Chila, to take a Tiketel and pour it over a Tibet. Absolutely permissible, Shmutim in HaTorah, Shmutim in the Rabbanon, according to the opinion of the Rashbam. However, others disagreed with the Rashbam. Those who disagreed with the Rashbam, there were two different ways to disagree with him. There are some who held that the Rashbam is absolutely wrong. Totally, completely wrong. In Akotze, Akotze, Tosfos in Masechet Zvachim quote such an opinion. They don't identify as who, but we'll just call it the Tosfos in Zvachim. Tosfos in Zvachim quotes an opinion that says no, that Iri is Dinuk Kli Rishon. Rashbam said it's like Kli Sheni. No, it's not true. It's Dinuk Kli Rishon. Therefore, pouring water from a tea kettle onto a tea bed is an Issur Min HaTorah. That is tantamount to taking a tea bag, putting it into a pot of water, either on the fire or off the fire. Doesn't really make a difference. That's Bishul De'araisa. So whereas Rebbetzin Rashbam was making tea lechatchila by pouring hot water onto the tibet, Rebbetzin, who should we call it? Rebbetzin Taizim Vachim. I don't know what the first name of the last name was. But whoever she was, so she held that that's an Issur Min HaTorah. Now, to make life even more Leibedik, there was a third opinion, and that was the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. To make it more Leibedik, not only in terms of Halacha, but in terms of family get-togethers, they happened to have been brothers, Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam. So Rabbeinu Tam, see, you thought you had good fights in your family, huh? So Tam, it says that the Tosfos Zvachim did not write. On the other hand, my brother, he's also not right. You know what the real answer to this question is? That Eroi has the ability to create a visual, but not a complete bishul. It's mevashel, what's called in halacha, a bishul kedei klipa. It has the ability to cook the outermost part of the particular item that you're trying to or trying not to cook. It has the ability to cook kedei klipa, but no more than kedei klipa. That is the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Now that opinion, when it comes to tea, is problematic because tea bag, so the kedei klipa is the tea leaf. And as soon as you pour the water onto the bag is porous, so the water goes right onto the tea leaf. So there is, so even if it's mevashel b'mashel, even the smallest amount of bishul would be prohibited, presumably min haTorah. So that kula, so to speak, of Rabbi Natan, that the Tosfos Zvachim is wrong, because Tosfos said that's mevashel b'kula. Rabbi Natan limited it to say kedei klipa. So in terms of tea leaves, tea bags, it's not going to make much of a difference. It's going to end up being prohibited. Dein lefi HaTosfos, Dein lefi Rabbi Natan. Rabbi Natan is important in other areas of halacha in terms of bishul. Let's say you have a type of a food that you want to pour boiling water onto, and you can create an artificial klipa around the food. Let's say, very common shayla, you want to heat up something in a baby bottle. You want to pour boiling water out of a tea kettle onto a baby bottle, and there's some uncooked food in that baby bottle. So there's milk which hasn't been cooked yet inside that baby bottle. Would that be permissible or not? So according to Rabbeinu Tam, the answer is yes, because Iru is only mevashel kedei klipa. It's not going to cook the plastic. In theory, good plastic if you melt it up high enough, but just pouring boiling water onto the bottle is not going to affect the bottle. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, at kan v'lo yosef, Iru can't be mevashel past the outermost, the surface of kedei klipa, so that would be perfectly permissible according to Rabbeinu Tam. Whereas according to Tosfos in Zvachim, that would be prohibited, because Iru is like a kli rishon, it's mevashel b'kulo, the bishul spreads throughout the entire entity that you're pouring the boiling water onto. So there will be enough gavina between Rabbeinu Tam and the Baal HaTosfos in Zvachim in other types of scenarios. But in terms of the tea bags, there's not going to be much of a difference. So, mahalacha, how do we pass it? We have three different opinions. According to the Rashbam, it's mudal lechetchila. According to Tosus, it's mevashel b'shuro. And according to Rabbi Natan, it's mevashel kedei klipa. Most of the poskim seem to side with Rabbi Natan. Shach, and they are passing this way, and the Shavua seems to go along with this. So we basically assume the middle ground, the opinion of Rabbi Natan, which in terms of making tea is problematic. Because basically what it leaves us as, that there is a problem of bishul, albeit only kedei klipa, but that's all you need. All you need is kedei klipa to be a problem. So the ma'aseh just to take boiling water and pour it onto a tea bag, the way we accept the halacha would be a very serious problem, would really be a potential issur min ha-Torah. Would only be the Rashba who would be matir lechatchila, that was really a das yochid, was not accepted la halacha. So to pour directly from a tea kettle or from an urn onto the tea bag, that we're not supposed to do. The question is, can we still invoke like Gemara Masechta Shabbos, which says cliche in the mavashal, if the world was an explicit Gemara. Once the water is in a klisheni, so then klisheni and mevashel, then there's nothing to be concerned with. So we have a new way to make tea on Shabbos. Instead of pouring the water directly onto the tea bag, just flip the order. Just take water out of the tea kettle, pour it into a cup, to an empty cup. You've created a klisheni, and now put the tea bag inside. So presumably that should be perfectly okay, and that's irrelevant to what you hold that iri. Iri is not relevant to this discussion. Because you have created a real bona fide cliche, so presumably that should be mukta. I say presumably because there is a Mishnah at the end of Masechet Shabbos, Nafkuf Memhei, where the Mishnah tells us that basically the din is that cliche in a mevashel, but there's an exception to every rule. The exception to the rule of cliche in a mevashel is what's called in halacha kali habishul, things which are very easily cooked, things which are tend to get cooked with even a little bit less of a direct source of heat. Kali Abishal says the Mishnah are subject to an issur of bishul, and even an issur min haTorah, the Gemara is quite clear, that they are subject to an issur bishul midda araisa, even in a cliche. So in general, there's a rule cliche in Mavashel, but Kali Abishal are the exception to that rule. So now the question becomes the multi-million dollar question, well, what are Kali Abishal? How do you define them? And of course, our question, does a tea bag qualify as one of the Kali Abishal? So the problem with this question is that the Mishnah, the Gemara, doesn't really tell us all that much about Kali Abishal. It just throws out a few examples of Kali Abishal. So one or two examples that the Mishnah, the Gemara, discuss are different types of fish, very small types of fish, just in case anyone's interested what kind of fish they are. Rashi says, Dag Shekorim, in Old French, Tes Vav Nun Yud Nun Aleph. Do I hear Charlie? Tuna fish, tunina. So that may or may not be the modern-day equivalent of tuna fish. So the Gemara speaks about little types of fish as being potential Kali Abishal. Question is, what about everything else in the world? Is everything Kali Abishal? Is nothing Kali Abishal? Do we know what Kali Abishal are? So there is a statement of one of the Rishonim, Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, who claimed that, at least the way many Acharonim understood him to mean, that we're not really sure what is Kali Abishal, what's not Kali Abishal. So therefore, in deference to the fact that cooking Kali Abishal in a klisheni is an issur min haTorah, it's clear in the Gemara, the Sofek Daraisa L'Chumra. So in one fell swoop, what Rabbi Leslie Mitz just did was he took the Gemara klisheni in a mevashel and basically put it into Shemus. It means nothing for us anymore. Once you hold that everything is Sofek Kali Abishal, so then everything is also in a klisheni. So now just take this Rabbi Leslie Mitz and plug it into a tea bag. So a tea bag may be Kali Abishal, maybe it is, maybe it's not. Your guess is as good as mine. But if we can't be machriya, we can't say for certain, so then we cannot even make tea anymore. Forget about Iwri Kli Rishon. We can't even make tea in a klisheni anymore because of this chashash of Kali Abishal.
Question of Metzias, I guess, is making tea bishul at all? Because in cold water, you can put in a tea bag, and if you have a lot of patience...
That's right. Excellent question. Phenomenal question. The whole shiur is working with one assumption. If that assumption is wrong, then I guess we can call it Rishon for today. But we're assuming that is called Bishul. Either you are correct that there was some poskim when tea first made it to Eastern Europe, so there was some poskim who threw it the question, wait a second, are we talking about Bishul altogether? Is this really Bishul in the classic sense of the word? And that's far that you say may be a factor also. A man may not be a factor, because the Gemara does talk about other Bishul, that other types of things, which also, if you wait long enough, it'll also, like the Gemara even speaks about bishul and salt. But if you put salt into cold water, it'll also, I guess, eventually it'll dissolve. So that point in and of itself is questionable. But there was some poskim who threw out the question, wait a second, maybe we're not even dealing with bishul, but let's assume for now that we are. Well, Kli Sheni, if it's Kali Abishal, it's also been a Torah. Right, so that's the problem. The problem is we don't really know what's called Kali Abishal. Is there anything that we know is not Kali Abishal? So the answer is yes. The Gemara, the Mishnah, talks explicitly about putting tavlin, about putting spices into a Kli Sheni. The Mishnah says in the favor that it's mutter even lechatchila. So although Rabbi Lezlinitz wasn't sure what is Kali Abishal, what's not, the only thing that we know is not is tavlin, because that's an explicit Mishnah. The question is that relevant for us? Is that statement of the Mishnah that Tavlin at least are not considered to be Kali Abishal, is that critical enough? So there is a tradition, the name of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's grandfather, that Reb Chaim maintained that a tea bag is considered in the halacha to be Tavlin. Why is that? What does Tavlin mean, says Reb Chaim? Tavlin means when you're dealing with something which is not really a food per se, but the purpose is to give flavor, to give a little bit of a spice to the other food that you want to eat or drink. So says Reb Chaim, the person's drinking a hot cup of water, so he's putting a tea bag in to give it a little bit of a kick, to give it a little bit of a flavor. So Reb Chaim assumed that a tea bag is considered to be the halakha equivalent of tavlin. And since the Gemara says that tavlin is clearly not Kali Abishal, so Reb Chaim put two and two together and said, therefore we can bring that Gemara in Shabbos of Mem, out of Shemus, that everything else is a problem in Kli Sheni, but tavlin are permissible, and tea is considered to be tavlin. If that is correct, so then it should be totally permissible to make tea, even the chatchila, in a Kli Sheni. Again, we have to be careful to pour the water into the cup first and then put the tea back. Do it the reverse would be a problem of Iri Kli Rishon, which would be also according to most opinions. But to do it, derech Kli Sheni would presumably be permissible. However, notwithstanding Reb Chaim, the Mishnah Berurah clearly did not go along this line of reasoning. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from what appears to be the more conventional view in the Acharonim, but that is not the case. That tea is not considered to be tavlin. Why is tea not considered to be tavlin? So there is a suggestion given by Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman said, why is it that tavlin are not kali hadishon? Halacha l'vosh v'sinai tavlin. Why is it? Why somehow it takes more heat to cook tavlin than other types of food? What is that all about? So Shlomo Zalman thought that tavlin that Chazal were describing were not like you go to the store and shop right and you get a little thing that says McCormick, you know, a little spices ground up. Tavlin meant, you ever see a big piece of cinnamon, a big piece of, you know, a big root or something, so that's like a big heavy-duty piece of meat. So you can argue that's not Kali Abishal. You need a lot of heat to cook up such a thing. But if you have a ground-up spice, so Shlomo Zalman says, once it's ground up, once it's in little pieces, so why should we just arbitrarily say that it's not subject to Bishul in a Kli Sheni? Why is that for sure not considered to be Kali Abishal? If you go along the lines of Shlomo Zalman, then teabag, even if Reb Chaim is theoretically right, teabag gives spice, gives taste to the food, but that's irrelevant, since the teabag is so little, the tea leaves are so tiny, so ein lecha kali abishal goda mizeh, I would say fakir, I would say the opposite of Reb Chaim, that if you have anything which you're afraid may become cooked in a Kli Sheni, I would say teabag, haraya, when you make yourself a cup of tea in a Kli Sheni, it's fully and completely cooked, there's no question about it, the tea is going to be made perfectly well. So maybe one could argue that tea may be a real example of Kali Abishal. It may be a real problem of Kali Abishal. So you have a machlokas really amongst the Gedolei Hadar, between Reb Chaim on the one hand, who claim that tea in a Kli Sheni, everything's mutar lechatchila, tea in a Kli Sheni, and the others who disagreed. There's others on the Mishnah Berurah, according to the Prima Gosdim and Shlomo Zalman Svarim, but it appears to be most of Moshe and others who assumed against Reb Chaim, who assumed that tea is not considered to be tavlin in the halachic sense of the word, and therefore we have no right to be makil on tea in a Kli Sheni. So there are different opinions in our communities about how to follow. But the story goes that once someone was chaffering the Rav about making tea in a Kli Sheni, so they said to the Rav, you know, the Mishnah Berurah says, you're not allowed to make tea in a Kli Sheni. So the Rav supposedly responded something along the lines of, my grandfather also knew how to learn, he was also Shomer Shabbos, so you know, relax.
Wouldn't tea be the main ingredient? Wouldn't there be a difference between the main ingredient?
You mean it's not even tavlin? I mean, questioning Reb Chaim's whole yisod, it's not tavlin. It's the thing itself. It's the food. Right, that's also a question. Is that really a correct comparison Reb Chaim's making? You're right. Menochinam, it's another ha'ara against Reb Chaim. Again, there are those who have such a tradition from the Rav, so far be it from me to question it, but those who don't have that particular tradition, so it would appear from the Mishnah Berurah, most of the later poskim to assume the chumrah this. So we're not so convinced that this svar of Reb Chaim that the tea is outright mutter in a Kli Sheni. So maybe one can make it a little bit better. Maybe one can, rather than making tea in a Kli Sheni, maybe one can make tea in a Kli Shlishi. So it just means getting another cup. So you take water out of your tea kettle, pour it into your first cup, and then take those that water poured in another cup, so now I've created a kli shlishi. So the question is, did you gain anything by creating a kli shlishi? This was also a further machlokes in the Gedolei HaPoskim. Does the term kli shlishi mean anything in halacha? Kali abishal, a prohibited in kli sheni, does that mean that mutter in a kli shlishi? Or maybe kli sheni, shlishi, revi, it's all the same thing. So this was also a machlokes. And here the Rav was on the machmirim side. Here the Rav thought that, well, it doesn't matter because the Rav was not to the kli sheni. But the Rav held this idea of kli rishon and kli sheni, those terms appear in the Gemara. But the term kli shlishi doesn't appear in the Gemara anywhere. To the best of my knowledge, it doesn't even appear in the Rishonim. Again, I could be wrong on this, but the earliest source that I saw of a kli shlishi is a Prima Gadim, who uses the phrase kli shlishi. So others type of that kli shlishi doesn't exist. It's kli rishon and everything else. Kli sheni ad yazrael, it's all the same. So if there's a problem of vishal and a kli sheni and kali vishal, it's the same problem with kli shlishi would be chamish, as long as the water is hot. So that's going to be a problem. And Rav Moshe was night alahak on this. Rav Moshe threw out a possibility that maybe kli shlishi, everything's mutter. Kli shlishi is a freebie. So if one accepts that idea that kli shlishi is a freebie, so then even if you want to be machmir, not to make tea in a kli sheni, but at least in a kli shlishi would presumably be mutter. And again, those who want to be machmir and aren't convinced of either one's svar means, they're not convinced Rav Chaim is right, they're not convinced Rav Moshe is right. Because there are good arguments against both of these kulas, so they would refrain from making tea even in a kli shlishi. So really we have three different possible permutations of making tea here, which we find in the sources. According to the Rashbam, you can make tea mamish straight, normal, just pour from the tea kettle directly onto the tea bag. But that hasn't been practiced in the last 800 years or so. That's the Shita of Rashbam. Then you have Reb Chaim, who was at least willing to be making on a kli sheni. And then even if you don't accept Reb Chaim, but Reb Moshe was at least willing to be making in a kli shlishi. Again, both of the kulas, both the kli sheni kula and the kli shlishi kula, have potential problems.
For a kli shlishi, do you have to put the water in a cup and then the tea bag, or can you pour it right over the tea bag?
Well, if you pour it over the tea bag, then you're doing what's called iri kli sheni, which you're back to square one. And if you hold that iri is like the kli that it came from, so then a kli sheni is a problem, iri kli sheni is a problem. So if you're already investing in the third cup, you might as well pour the water in first.
Could you briefly cover it some
coffee? Yeah, we're gonna get to the answer. Yeah, we're gonna get to that. Hopefully we'll get to that. So let's assume for now those who want to be making with a kli sheni, or maybe those who want to only be making with a kli shlishi. So we gave an example of a kli sheni, kli shlishi very quickly. We said you have a tea kettle, take it off the fire, pour it into a cup, that's a kli sheni. You pour that into another cup, that's a kli shlishi. That's true when you're dealing with a tea kettle. What about when you're dealing with an urn? Presumably it's the same thing. The urn is a kli rishon, because it's on the fire. It's not a real fire, but it's an electric, the unit that's heating up the water, it's like the status of a fire. So the water in the urn is a kli rishon. Goes into the first cup, that's a kli sheni. From there to the other cup, that's a kli shlishi. So there is a tradition that's set over in the name of the Chazon Ish. To the best of my knowledge, it's not in print anywhere in the name of the Chazon Ish. The Shemesh Shabbos Bilchosa quotes that Shemati Shei Omer B'Shem HaChazon Ish the following. You have to always get nervous about this because the Chazon Ish apparently said that anything that's said over in his name that's not in print, so don't believe. The only problem is that that particular statement of the Chazon Ish is not in print, so we're not. But it is quoted in the name of the Chazon Ish as follows. Now, when do we say that something is considered to be a kli sheni? Like in the classic example, you pour water. Like the case in the Mishnah, you take a pot of water and pour it into a cup. So the cup is a kli sheni. When you took that pot and you poured it into the empty cup, it was already away from the fire. It was already a kli rishon shelo al gabi ha'esh. What would the din be if a person has a pot of water sitting on the fire and rather than taking it off the fire, just tip it, you just lean it over and pour its contents into a cup, and it's still al ha'esh at the time that the iri is taking place. So the Chazon Ish is quoted as saying, maybe that's considered to be like a kli rishon. Maybe the water in the cup is still connected to the water in the pot, which is still connected to the fire. So that cup is still a kli rishon. So that's a very, very big question, whether that's true. If that would be true, that would do us in terms of the urns, because when you put water under the urn, so the water is still connected to the aish, it's still all one big unit, so the water that's coming into the cup is still kli rishon water, so you're one cup behind. So now you have a kli rishon. Now if you want to create a kli sheni, you got to get another cup, and if you want to create a kli shlishi, you got to get two more cups. So whereas, if you don't accept this tradition in the name of the Chazon Ish, so then you can treat an urn as the same as a regular tea kettle. If you hold it to Chazon Ish, you got to add a cup per chumrah. So whatever chumrah you want to pick, you got to add another cup to it. If you're dealing with an urn, again, assuming that this tradition is correct.
If the element is not on, then you're already done.
Right, if it's not on, then you're better off, right? Then you would be better off.
Unfortunately, that is a
back into the original cup. I think the folks were able. Yeah, it's like when we were little, you know, back and forth, when the kids complain about the cup too hot and cold. I think so.
So you said that even if the flow is stopped.
Would he say even if the flow is stopped? I don't know. The stomach, not. But in the stomach, he only said it when it was all continued. I think so. That chazanish is very important, just as an aside in terms of kashrus, because according to that svara, the water that comes out of our sinks is also kli rishon water, because it's all mechuber yachad. The boiler is on, so then it's one long flow from the boiler up from the basement up through the pipes into the sink. So that means the water, it's usually was assumed that water that's coming out of our sinks is iri kli rishon water, and once it hits the sink, it's kli sheni. Whereas according to the chazanish, even when it hits the sink, it may still be kli rishon. The importance of that in terms of kashrus is absolutely critical in terms of the significance of issues that come up in terms of washing plates and milking dishes together. So that chazanish is important both in terms of hilchos Shabbos as well as in terms of hilchos kashrus. So let's assume the individuals don't want to get involved in any of these shilas. They don't want to make tian Shabbos, no kli rishon, klishenis, klishlishes. But nice, they still want to have a good hot cup of tea and Shabbos. So what do you do? You can invoke another principle. I thought that clock was going. It was very misleading because I looked at it right when I started the shiur. I looked at it, said it's 11. I said, "Gavaldik, we're almost done. We're out of here." Question is, maybe we can invoke another principle in order to enable us to be able to make tea on Shabbos, and that's the principle of Ein Bishel Achar Bishel, which would really mean that we have to cook the tea from before Shabbos. The Mishnah tells us there's a klal that Ein Bishel Achar Bishel. Once something is cooked, we assume that means once it's fully cooked, it's the choshesh, once it's fully, completely cooked, so then there's no problem whatsoever to quote unquote recook it on Shabbos. Now, one should not necessarily infer from here that once something is cooked, therefore you put it back directly onto the fire on Shabbos. That's a whole different problem. What's called Havzara, maybe another Yom Kippur Rishon, we'll get to that. But let's leave out that problem of putting food directly back onto the fire. Just from the bishul angle, if it's the pot that's affecting the cooking, is off the fire, so it's only a bishul question. And the klal is that ein bishul acha bishul. So let's say a person wants to make tea from before Shabbos, so they could theoretically do that. What would that mean practically speaking? So that's where the issue of making sense, making a pre-made tea, comes into play. So the person takes a couple of tea bags and quote-unquote cooks them up on Friday afternoon. So now you have a concentrate of tea. So that concentrate was already made, was already cooked. So then, you don't want to drink the concentrate on Shabbos. You want to then take a little bit of that sense and mix it into a cup of boiling water on Shabbos. So presumably that would be okay because the tea was already cooked. So ein bishul acha bishul. Well, not so fast, because this klal of ein bishul acha bishul, although it's just about an explicit mishnah in Daf Kuf Mem Hayam Beis and Masechta Shabbos, that same mishnah we referred to before, there were rishonim who argue that the klal of ein bishul acha bishul only applies to dry food, doesn't apply to wet food, to a dover lach. Why should there be such a distinction? So the svara is pretty simple, that when it comes to dry food, so once you cook yourself a piece of chicken, even a cold cooked piece of chicken is still a cooked piece of chicken, whereas a bowl of soup, once it cools off, so then you wouldn't even dream of eating it in that state, but could be that the original bishul is misbatel. You're dealing with the double lot, so the question is, can you really invoke the principle of ein bishul acha bishul? How do we paskin on that shaila of ein bishul acha bishul and davar lach? So the Ramah has the following hachra, the following compromise. The Ramah says that it depends how much the liquid has cooled down. If the liquid is completely cold, but you cooked it Friday afternoon and now it's back to room temperature, just slightly above it, it's really cold, it's mitzanin lekamri in halacha, so then we are choshesh that yesh bishul acha bishul bidavar lach. However, says the Ramah, if it's still warm, and here was where the Ramah is being makil, so you got to take your coolers when you get them because there ain't too many. So comes the Ramah and says, if it's still warm, even though it's not yet lettuce bowl, it's not piping hot, but it's still basically warmish. So says the Ramah, then we have a right to be lenient, ein bishul acha bishul even bedovelach. Why that distinction should be true is a very, very big question. It's the machlok sacharon of what the Ramah meant, but that's what the Ramah says. Bottom line is the Ramah says that if it's mitzaren legamrei, then you have to be concerned with recooking. If it's lo mitzaren legamrei, then you don't have to be concerned. What does that mean practically in terms of making the sense? So if a person prepares the sense, you have cooked tea liquid, which is sitting on Friday afternoon, and you want to mix that with boiling water. So the question is, what would the din be? Two different scenarios. What if the tea sands is still warm? So you kept it in a little pot or something on the blech, so it's still warm even though it's on the edge of the blech, it's not piping hot. That would be all right. You would not have to be concerned with putting that mixture into a cup of boiling water or pouring from the boiling water onto it. Everything is mutter because ein bishel acha bishel b'davar lach shelo nitzan in the gamrin. Problem is, what if it is nitzan in the gamrin? What if it totally cooled off? So now you have a problem because I want to take this pre-cooked tea sense, which has cooled off, which has become no overcooked. So now you're right back where you started. How can I mix this together with the hot water on Shabbos? That's considered to be a problem of bishul. So here the Mishnah Berurah comes up with a cooler. Here the Mishnah Berurah says that, true, we are choshesh, that yesh bishul acha bishul b'dov alach shen etzal legamen. That is true. And true, we try to avoid cooking things in klisheinim because we don't know what's kali bishul, what's not kali bishul. It says the Mishnah Berurah, havudu alosif Allah. You're not required to combine both of these chumras together. It's one chumra per cup of tea, per cup. Go and tell the person that you can't take your pre-cooked scents, which cooled off, and you can't put it into a klisheini. Even the Mishnah Berurah says, ad kan lo yoseh. You're not mechuyav to combine those two chumras together. Therefore, the Mishnah Berurah paskens halacha lemaisa, that as long as the tea scents was cooked for Shabbos, completely ready from before Shabbos, even though it's subsequently cooled down, it's perfectly permissible to put it into a klisheini. Not to do eerily from a klisheini onto it. Oh no, that the Rashbam, forget it, we're not going to be making it like that. But in the klisheini, that's okay. So that's psak of the Mishnah Berurah. And if your sense is warm still, then you can do whatever you want with it. You can put it directly into a klisheini. If your sense has cooled down, so then you have to at least be careful not to put it into a klisheini. But you could put it into a klisheini. Again, how you would define klisheini and klisheini as relates to the urn goes back to that tradition about the chazanish, whether it's correct and whether we accept it. The halacha, which is hard to give an absolute answer to that question, but at least concerning the tea kettle, so one would be permitted to at least make a klisheini, at least pour the water out of the tea kettle into a cup, and then put even the ice cold scents in because it was prepared before. Now, the advantage of having a cup of tea in a klisheini is also true in terms of adding things to the tea. Because there may be other things you want to add to the tea. Let's say, for example, a person wants to put sugar into the tea. So our sugar, Baruch Hashem, has been cooked from beforehand, but still there are poskim who argue that sugar may have the status of a davar lach, of a liquid in halacha, because it absorbs right away, because it dissolves right away into the liquid. So that's a question that may also have the status of a davar lach. So there may be a problem of bishul lach, bishul on sugar. But again, the Mishnah Berurah says, klisheini, you're home free. Well, let's say a person wants to put some milk into his cup of tea. So according to the Mishnah Berurah, that would also be okay, because since our milk was already pre-cooked, all the milk was pasteurized, we hope. So therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, it would be perfectly permissible to take the pre-cooked milk or the pre-cooked sugar and put it into your klisheini and mix in the scents into your klisheini. On Shabbos, Mishnah Berurah has absolutely no qualms about that. The same notion of invoking the principle of klisheini combined with ein bishul acha bishul is helpful in terms of the instant coffee, in terms of instant things. All the instant powder things we assume are also cooked at some point in the process of being made, but the problem is they've cooled down now, and powders with choshesh may have the status of a davar lach because they dissolve right away. So to pour hot water onto the instant tea or onto the instant coffee, we would try to refrain from doing. If you put the water in first and then put the powder in afterwards to create that klisheini, that would be presumably permissible. So that's just a little bit of a sikkum, a little bit of a summary as to what we have here. So in terms of a real problem with bishul on tea, we're assuming that there is a very serious problem. To make tea in a klisheini is also min haTorah. To do iroi onto the tea bags, except according to the Rashbam, would be an issur min haTorah. To cook the tea bag in a klisheini, unless you're willing to accept that kula of chayim, that its status of tavlin, we're going to be concerned with the issue of kali hafishol. So we're not going to rely on the klisheini according to the bachanirim. Whether klishlishi is an option depends on, does klishlishi even exist? Is that really a viable option altogether? So another possible way to really circumvent these problems is to introduce the principle of ein bishul acha bishul. The problem with ein bishul acha bishul is that when you're dealing with the davar lach, so sometimes that rule may not apply. But even if it doesn't apply, even if you're dealing with the double action, it's silent legamre, according to the kula of the Mishnah Berurah, you're not required to combine that with all the other chumas of klisheni. So at the end of the day, if one has sense, and even if the sense is cooled down, then a klisheni is perfectly permissible. And the advantage of having a klisheni is that you don't have to be concerned anymore with adding in the sugars and the milk as well.
Two questions. In the case of the Kavanish idea with the urn, but most of the time when you think with water from the urn, if the light is on, it means it's cooked and the element is not working. So therefore...
Right, in Ochanavi, it would depend, right. In Ochanavi, even the Chumr of the Chazmish would only apply if the element is still on, right.
Okay. And the second thing is, what do you think about the idea of using styrofoam cups and flipping them one over another and you know the temperature then?
Right, that's a question. There are some both of them who raise the question about the issue of styrofoam cups, because presumably the idea of klisheni is that it's supposed to cool down the water to some degree. That's a big question, whether that's really what klisheni is all about. This really touches on what Tosfos raises the problem in Masechta Shabbos, is that the reality is that you can have a klisheni that's hotter than a kli rishon. Because if you had a kli rishon that was 190 degrees and you pour it into a cup, so now it's 180 degrees, so that's a klisheni. Whereas if you had water in a pot and it's only 140 degrees, and that's the kli rishon, but how can it be? The kli sheni is hotter than the kli rishon. That's a serious problem. So Tosfos discusses how that could be so. That's a big question in the poskim. Is kli rishon kli sheni really a function of heat, or is kli rishon and kli sheni more a function of perhaps what's called derech bishul bekach, what's considered to be toldos ha'esh? Maybe it's too far removed from the esh to be considered to be a problem of bishul. So the issue of the styrofoam cups may be dependent on that. If you have a type of situation where clearly the temperature hasn't changed, does that affect us in halacha?
Could you avoid the davar lach problem by instead of using the essence, use the pre-cooked tea bag? In other words, you use the cook the tea bag on Friday afternoon.
Right.
You then put it in a dish and
dries
out.
Also
a borer problem.
Maybe a borer problem. If other problems, it may not be as effective. It's a possibility. It would potentially be a possibility. Just that issue of kli rishon kli sheni that you mentioned, is kli rishon kli sheni, is that really a function of temperature or not? This is the famous joke about the person. The wife comes and brings a cup of hot tea to her husband on Friday night, and Nebuch, she spills it all over him. So he starts screaming, "Ah, give all the hot!" So she says, "Don't worry, it's a cliché." He says, "Oh, fuck." Okay.
This might be more of a visual, but the instant coffee, since most instant coffee is aren't boiled at 100 degrees, it's boiled at much lower temperature than cold the pressure. Does that change the status of
being... Well, that's a big question, whether the Aimbish Lach Abishal, does it have to really reach boiling, even if it reaches Yatzaletet? That was a Machlekes for Moshe and others. Is that
even
invoke...
It doesn't reach Yatzaletet, because of the conservative pressure.
Right, that's also a question. Does boiling mean literally has to reach 212? This is the Shiloh, the folks can discuss. Let's say you want a Kasher at Kli. So let's say it became Treif in sea level, now you want a Kasher in Denver. So is it not going to be necessarily the same boiling point? So does that play a role in Halach at all? Do we say that boiling is boiling? It doesn't make a difference whether it was 212, whether it was 180. It doesn't make a difference. That's a somewhat of a question.
There's also different ways of processing some of these instant products. For example, freeze-dried coffee versus regular instant coffee versus the elite powdered coffee from Israel.
There was some Bosnian fact that maybe there wasn't a visual process done along the way. I think it's usually, most I think assume that somewhere along the way that there was heat which was introduced. Is it? I hope, I think. We hope. But who worked with that stuff? Yeah.
Is there any issue with
dyeing,
changing the color?
Yeah, the Mishnah throws it in kind of as an afterthought. There was some Acharonim, some Rishonim already who held there's a problem with Tzoveya by Oakland. So we hold the Ikra did there's no problem with Tzoveya, there's no problem with dyeing, which was the Ikra maker I did. The Mishnah Berurah says that since there was some who held there is a problem, so Mishnah Berurah thought, again, this is also not so partial, he thought that it's less of a problem if the thing that's giving the color is in first. So that would lead you to believe that it may be better to pour the boiling water onto the tea, which is really the antithesis of everything that we're saying. So the Mishnah Berurah says that whenever you're dealing with the bishul problem, so then the bishul issues are more important than the tzaveya problem. The tzaveya was really a das yachid. But if you don't have any bishul problems, so then try to be machmir with the tzaveya. I'll tell you the truth, I'm very nervous to tell people this, because it gets everybody tzimish. Because when you start to tell everybody, well, sometimes put the tea in first and sometimes not, and then so then everyone forgets what to do.
What
so the Mishnah Berurah himself is not so concerned.
Dealing with milk and tea.
Milk and tea.
So you're not dealing with the... What
colors? Yeah, I don't know. Milk and tea, what's covering what? I don't know. The whole Tzavei by Oakland is so questionable that over the Rishonim assume there's no problem with Tzavei by Oakland. So, It's hard for me to start to make hezbainus in this because I'm afraid that throws people off.
Yesterday morning, before going to shul, I made myself a cup of tea in your house.
In my house, but you didn't wake me up. That's why I don't eat there anymore, Matt.
I noticed that my daughter made the tamtzitz, made the tea sensing at the Jerul pitch, was covered with aluminum foil. The purpose of that to keep it a little warmer. The idea.
No, I think.